You may not be thinking much about it, or maybe you are, but you could be spending a third of your lifetime in retirement. And people are certainly living longer. They're retiring earlier. Larry Mueller here, by the way. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. And great to have our guest with us next, Helen Wilkes. She's an octogenarian, spent 40 years teaching, researching, and delving deeply into the humanities. And she's the author of the award-winning book, Letters from the Lost. We're going to be talking with her about her new book. It's called The Aging of Aquarius, Igniting Passion and Purpose as an Elder. We turn to our guest, Helen Wilkes, joining us by phone. Helen, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm on after somebody who knows all about space, and I'm really deeply honored.
Well, I tell you what, to begin with, just tell us a little bit about yourself. What was your life like before you retired, and what's it been like since you left the workforce?
Well, I found that in the workforce, I was constantly, somebody was always pushing my buttons, and I was always needed, and you know, there really wasn't time for reflection and to go inward and to figure out what really, really matters to me. I was raising a family. I was, you know, all the usual things that everyone gets super involved in. And it's only in retirement that I've really had the leisure to say, what matters?
Yeah.
And what do I want to do with my life? And that life is extending, you know, medicine is extending our lives literally by the day. So those of us who are blessed with reasonable, good health, we have so much more that we can give to the world. And I feel it's important that we give because we feel better about ourselves when we're giving instead of simply taking.
I tell you what, I have a number of friends who've retired. And I know some people who just embraced it and couldn't wait to do it and have had a wonderful time. I've had others who were pretty apprehensive about retiring and kind of worried about retiring. What about you? Were you apprehensive when you thought about retirement?
I can't say that I was. I got huge satisfaction out of what I was doing, but I reached the point where I felt that I was giving nonstop and also needed to renew myself in some way. You can't just keep giving and giving and giving, in particular as a teacher in education. You know, the needs of your students are always the priority, and you're always trying to stay on top of new developments and new ways of helping people, and, you know, social things come into it where it's not just a matter of teaching, but a matter of understanding the pressures that students are under. What do you do when a child comes hungry to school, or, you know, all these other issues? So I needed time to regroup and say, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? And is what I'm giving now enough?
Yeah. Go ahead,
you know,
I'm sorry.
And some of it, I think, also, you know, your question to me hinges on what satisfactions are we getting from our work? Is it enough? Or do each of us think that there's a little bit more inside ourselves that hasn't yet been developed and that needs to grow?
You talk in the book about some misconceptions that new retirees or those contemplating it have about retirement. Talk about those a bit.
I think that we are sold by various people who market things that in retirement we aren't supposed to do anything, that this is our reward for a life of hard work. Yes and no. Those of us who have had careers have identified hugely with the work we do. And I think almost everyone tries to some extent to identify with the work they do. I think of people who, you know, I watched somebody washing a floor in a public place the other day so carefully. And I thought, you know, that man wants this space to be clean for other people to use and enjoy. He's doing the best he can. We identify with our work. It gives us meaning. And we have to say in retirement, So what will give us meaning? I don't think retirement is just about pleasure. You can't spend a third of your life pursuing pleasure. You have to also derive some deeper satisfactions.
Yeah, I've talked to some people who had envisioned a life of golf or some other recreation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't take long before they realized that, you know, I can't play golf every day. Or
exactly. I talked to a golfer last week, and he said just that. I love golf, but is that all there is?
Yeah.
And I think we need to give thought to that extra that we're going to do. And that retirement is not just about sitting under a palm tree with a margarita in our hands. And it's not about an endless series of cruises. We have to give to the world in order to feel good about ourselves.
So is that why you decided to write this book? Or let me put it this way. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, it grew slowly, as all things grow slowly. I started by realizing how many amazing people there were in my life. Just people I encountered, both friends that I knew and people that I knew casually. And I realized how much time so many people are spending doing things for other people. And one thing led to another. I started to write out my thoughts so that I would get some clarity, and they just kept growing, and then I started reading books about the whole issue of aging, and a book evolved.
And a fascinating one, my producer, Jill Nadeau, says, I'm passing a copy of your book along to a relative who she thinks is going to benefit from it greatly, because Jill herself benefited from it greatly. So,
I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I was thinking, I'm getting so much feedback from people who are saying, you know, this is also of interest to younger people. Because in the new world, people are shifting their professions more and more often. And some people are actually retiring at a very, very young age. You know, we used to retire at 65 because when they first figured out retirement, people were supposed to die at 67. That was the average lifespan. I'm in my 80s now, and I still hope to have some years ahead of me, as do the people around me. So life is changing, and we need to rethink how we conceptualize age at every stage of our life.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, I think early on in the book, and one thing you do is you have at the end of the chapter, you have different things to consider or perhaps write down as folks read through. And you had something to the effect, write down what excites you, two things I want to do before I die, two things I want to do this year, two things I want to do this month. Or two things I plan to do this week, or two things I plan to do today for myself, my family, or my friends, or one thing I plan to do today for my broader community, for the world. Well, those are questions that any of us should be asking, perhaps, and writing down.
Right. I'm hoping that there's something there for every reader, and not just for the retiree.
I think there are. The book is divided into six sections. Each section is divided into chapters, and at the end of each chapter is that idea or action area. I'm wondering why you decided to organize it this way.
Well, part of it was my publisher, who are into social justice issues, and they felt that my book was really getting people to think about broader terms. What is their life about, and how do they do something with their life so the world is a better place for their having been here? So they asked me to come up with some questions that people could ask themselves, and they're largely questions that I ask myself in the process. And I think that was the heart of it.
You know, and the other thing I was going to mention, too, are the terms we use to describe people who are retired. They can be a little controversial in a way. You decided to use certain terms in the book.
I love the word elder, but I'm very conscious of, you know, a social appropriation of that word. We in our society don't respect people who are old. We tend to, you know, have more negatives than positives. And the other thing that I became aware of through the writing of this book is that old age by itself does not necessarily bring us wisdom. And there are many young people who already have a great deal of wisdom because they too are thinking about some of these issues and they have given them thought.
And so there are, you are quite, well, we'll get to this after we take our break, but you have quite specific terms that you use, Helen, and we'll bring those up as we, after the news. Helen Wilkes is our guest today. She is the author of The Aging of Aquarius, Igniting Passion and Purpose as an Elder. If you are retired, is your retirement what you expected? If you are not retired, what questions might you have about it? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about making retirement meaningful. And our guest is Helen Wilkes. She's an octogenarian who spent 40 years teaching, researching, and delving deeply into the humanities. She's the author of the award-winning book, Letters from the Lost. And her new book is called The Aging of Aquarius, Igniting Passion and Purpose as an Elder. So, if you're retired, what keeps you happy in your retirement? What questions do you have about adding passion to your life? And Helen, we've got Eddie on who's been waiting a while, so let's give Eddie a chance to join us from Neshota. Thanks so much for joining us. What's on your mind?
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to Helen and you. I always have a great show and enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm a high school teacher, retired some 20 years now, and I look back, and it's good to look back and see the joy I had with my work, but I want to make a couple of recommendations that are probably also in the book. People who are about to retire need to get their heads wrapped around their health, to start eating right and sleeping right and getting some exercise. And then once that retirement hits, for heaven's sakes, get out there and volunteer. I volunteer in two or three different places and enjoy it so much. It's a joy of giving. And then we often have breakfast every Thursday morning with a bunch of guys ahead of this morning. And you look around that restaurant and you can count five, six, seven guys sitting all by themselves. And they're lonely. And we've got seven guys at our table laughing and having a good time. So my suggestion would be for those individuals, man or woman, get on the phone, call somebody, ask them to go out for lunch or go for a walk or go fishing or hiking, and look forward to your retirement.
Social isolation, they are now saying, is the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day, that it is killing people because they're not reaching out. And I'm thinking, yes, those people who are by themselves need to phone other people, but those of us who are with people, sometimes people are shy, don't know how to approach other people. We also need to reach out, all of us, and say to the guy who's sitting all by himself at the table, hey, come over and join us. Hey, be a part of this. I'm finding that old age is allowing me to take kind of social risks like that that I would not have dared do in my younger years, to reach out to people and to smile at people on the street and to stop and pet their dog or comment on the beautiful red scarf they're wearing. And one thing leads to another leads to another. But I think this social isolation is becoming a real problem, and of course our technology is just making that worse, so that we're connected all the time, but not face-to-face.
Yeah. And he's certainly right about health.
Absolutely.
Exercising and volunteering.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And when we volunteer, when we do something for somebody else, we feel better. You know, I'm just glancing down at the book that's in front of me, and I've got a quote here from Maggie Kuhn, who was the founder of the Grey Panthers. And she said, "We are the elders, the experienced ones, responsible for the survival of our society. We are not wrinkled babies succumbing to trivial, purposeless waste of our years and our time. We are a new breed of old people."
Oh.
I thought that was amazing.
It is. And you've sprinkled a lot of quotes throughout the book, which I thought were, well, they were all interesting to me. But why did you choose to do that?
Because I wanted to learn about aging, and that's my way. And then when I've got over 100 quotes in the book from different books that I have read and found meaningful. We learn from other people all the time. And I think we never stop learning and we never stop growing. That's what life is about, growth.
Well, it's,
you know, it strikes me that everything grows other than a stone. And humans are, as long as we're alive, we should be growing in some way.
Lori in Hale's Corners, it's your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Larry. We're old friends, you know.
We are.
I don't know if you remember, but we put together a little, I forget what it was called now. It was a little poem kind of thing. And about, never mind. I have a slippery brain. But never mind. But what I wanted to say is your speaker is right on. Tony and I, my husband and I, decided we would move over here to Forest Ridge. Before, we just had to. We looked around at various senior communities. We found one that's conveniently located for various reasons. We are able to be part of a community and add giving to it much better this way. And yes, I can put eye drops in the eyes of the person with only three kids that come around and give her eye drops because she can't do it herself. So I'm the extra person that can do it. It's that stuff. And then we have a sing-along now. We didn't have it before. I'm a cavorter. I've given myself permission to cavort. That means dance, have humor, do sing-alongs and dance-alongs and doing bubbles. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Outside.
Lori, thank you very much for calling. Well, comment from you, Helen.
Well, I think, you know, this decision to move to retirement communities, I think, has to be thought out very carefully. It works for some people, and it obviously has for this listener. But other people, you know, are attached to their community. I couldn't imagine leaving where I am and moving somewhere simply because, you know, it doesn't rain as much as it does here in Vancouver, or it's warmer and I get more sunshine. I get my sunshine from community, from the people around me. And you have to decide whether you want to start over again in a new community or whether you want to reach out in the community where you already live and where there are lots and lots of people you know and people you don't know. One of the things I'm finding fascinating is how many people I kind of knew casually without really knowing them in depth and realizing the amazing things that they have done and continue to do with their lives.
Yeah.
That to me has been a real revelation.
So it's more of it's a kind of an individual thing. You're certainly if senior living opportunities are there and you like that idea, go ahead, but don't feel like you have to do it, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's more to life, as I say. Golf is great, as is every pleasure, but there's more to life than just the pursuit of pleasures. And it's important that we think of how we can activate. But, you know, sometimes right here where we are in our own communities, there's so much that each of us can do and learn and benefit from.
I think you write in the book, just going along the senior living home kind of thing, there's one person you write about who got into that and then thought, gee, there isn't a lot going on, but then took the initiative to, like Lori, it sounds like Lori did, to get some things started that created more involvement for everybody.
Absolutely. And there are countless groups. I've just been invited to speak to a group that is environmental, and it's all seniors teaching young children how to grow things in a garden, how to plant things, the number of things that we can do with the wisdom that we've accumulated through a lifetime is just amazing. And all of us have skills that we can teach another person.
Yeah.
And all of us have ways of sharing that we need to value.
Lori, thanks again for calling. I appreciate your call. Let's turn to Barbara in West Bend next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I just thought I'd check in with you. I recently went back to college. I'm 76 years old, been retired a long time now, and I decided that education was my passion. So I'm back at the University of Wisconsin, Washington County, and I'm thoroughly enjoying myself.
Comment. Thanks, Barbara, for calling. Helen, comment.
Great. I think that's absolutely fabulous. And you know, learning to me, of course, we never stop learning. And whatever it is that we're interested in, good for you to go back to university. Good for you. And, you know, I know people who are taking courses, who are actually taking courses, or who, if they're having mobility issues, they're taking them online, or if they're not in a big center where it's easy to get those courses, they're doing it online. There are so many ways of expanding the world that we live in. And technology, to me, is a wonderful gift in that direction.
So you're talking about kind of moving forward, and I think in many cases, people, as we get older, we tend to romanticize the past a bit, and, you know, sometimes long for the past, or how things definitely.
I've got a chapter called the Good Old Days, and I point out that they were not. They were not. There are so many things that we take for granted today that were unheard of before. The very word environmentalism did not exist when I was a child. Racism, sexism, all of these isms, homophobia, they were accepted. They were normal. It was standard to poke fun at various people. Now we teach bullying in schools and how to avoid doing things that are offensive to whatever minority group. I think our world has changed for the better, and we need to realize that all that stuff that we remember from the good old days, no, they weren't the good old days. We didn't encourage children to think positively of themselves and to feel good about the contributions they could make in the world. Instead, we would slap them.
Yeah.
You know, so many things that I remember from my childhood that are horrifying now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No, it's, you know, the world is getting better, even though our news media and the things we hear don't always make us feel that.
Let's go. Barbara, again, thank you. Sharon in Winona, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. My question is that I have limited vision, I have macular degeneration, am about one step from being legally blind, but I can still function, and I would love to be able to volunteer Do you have any suggestions?
Whoa.
So, well, it's an interesting, you know, when we are older, sometimes those things like that develop, could develop like that at any age. But how do you overcome, not having the ability that you once had to find places where you can volunteer and find things that you can do?
I'm in awe of your question, and because I read so much, I think, what would my life be like if I couldn't read? And for me, that, you know, I can't imagine losing vision. I can imagine you losing my mobility. I can imagine losing my hearing, but not my vision. So thank you to this caller for asking this question. And what springs to mind, yesterday I encountered a woman with a seeing eye dog, and I watched how many children were drawn to her feet. And she was sitting in a corner of a very busy room with the dog, and she was surrounded by children who were petting the dog and watching this very calm dog. And I was thinking about how just her presence is adding something to the room and to everyone in that room. And I'm thinking also of technology. I just read of a woman who is who is confined to her bed. She has some kind of a horrible condition in which she cannot even sit up in her bed. She has to lie flat. And she's using technology to reach out to other people who are bedridden. Mm. And she has daily conversations with people who are also suffering. So it strikes me that it must be so hard to be in your shoes, and yet there are ways, and you will find a way to make yourself visible and to reach out to others the way you seem to long to do. Congratulations for being who you are.
I would, just to add to that, I might consider even talking with the physicians who I deal with about potential opportunities. I might consider the agencies that you may be working with now as you lose your sight, and talking to them about their experiences with volunteerism or places that you might be able to volunteer at. Sharon, those would be some starting points for me as well. And I think those, you know, could be helpful, be a good way to start at least this whole process for you. So, and I wish you good luck. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your call. Mary in New Berlin will turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to comment. We do go to Arizona for the winter, and we are in a senior community, a Del Webb one, and there is so much to do there for seniors, anybody that is 60 or older, or actually 55. But we do find so many things that people have never done before in their lives, men and women, and it's not just golf. And it's just a wonderful thing to do. And you do keep your mind going and your activities. And everybody seems to be a lot younger there because they are able to do things. And if they say they're bored, there's something wrong with them.
And Mary, I think there, I was just thinking about another friend who said he found a number of volunteer opportunities within a center, like you're talking about, within a senior community like you're talking about.
Oh, definitely. There's so many things that you can get involved with. So, never a dull moment.
Yeah, I remember he worked with children who were having some problems with school and helping those kids get through their schooling. And certainly, Helen, that's a good opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But I'm also focusing on the people who may not necessarily be able to afford to do that. and for whom finances are a concern. And I you know, I want to be very careful to not make everybody think that the good life means that you have to have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can have a good life by doing things that are meaningful to you, no matter where you live.
And you give many examples. I wanted to mention that it's a kind of a personal journey here in your book, and you are certainly not afraid to talk about your own experiences as well as the experiences of others.
Right, right. Because I think in every life there come difficult moments. And you know, in our North American society, we're only taught that, you know, when anybody asks us, how are you, we're supposed to say, fine. Right? It's the automatic response. How are you? Fine. Or the second response is busy. But sometimes people are hurting deeply. Some people are widowed and don't have a significant other to do things with and are lonely and isolated and don't have a lot of money. So I need to be also conscious that those people also can find meaning and passion and purpose in their life, and that it's not a matter of how much money you have. It's a matter of how you go about living your life day by day.
Day by day and year by year. And I do want to mention again that there are some, at the end of each chapter, there are some specific things that people can either write down or ask about. And you cover kind of the whole gamut of life as a retiree, right up to and including looking at the end and how we should look at the end. And I wish we had a little more time to talk about it, but I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Helen, and talking with us. It's been a pleasure to visit with you, and you are having a great life.
Thank you. Thank you, and I wish a great life to everyone out there. Thank you all for listening.
Helen Wilkes was our guest. She's the author of the book, The Aging of Aquarius, Igniting Passion and Purpose as an Elder.